Hey, welcome to our second to last class on EO. It's pretty crazy. We have 20 prakim left, but we will do 10 prakim today, God willing, and then 10 prakim next week. So last we left off was at the end of the second round of arguments. If you remember, we said that there were three rounds. The first two rounds, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Sofar really give Eov a run for his money, and they really start saying that you are deserving of some sort of a punishment, and that's why you are where you are now. You'll notice that there is a difference between how they do attack Eov in this third round. That's very different than the first two rounds. Malcolm, you can't answer this question since we spoke with us last week a little bit, but for those of you who weren't here in our short pre-class, why would you have a need for a third round? So in other words, we said the first round, okay, so that's when you give your opening arguments. The second round, that's when you give your rebuttal arguments, right? So they spoke in the first round, then Eov argued back, and then in the second round, they gave their real rebuttal to what he said, and then Eov spoke back. So why would you now need to have a third round?
A conclusion. Yeah, like a closing statement.
Okay, good. Maybe like a closing statement. How would you characterize that closing statement? So in other words, we said the first round was like more of like a calm, like Eliphaz was like, Eov, you're like, you probably weren't such a good guy, so like, bad things don't just happen for no reason, so you should really repent. And then Eov was like, no, I'm not really so bad. And then in the second round, Eliphaz was like, you're like this like really bad guy, or like really bad things happen to people who really do bad things, so the implication was that you must be a bad person. And Eov was, understandably upset, and then he responded directly in line with that. The third round is 100% like you said. So it is the sort of like the closing arguments. But what happens is if you have two people who are having a semi-respectful debate at the beginning, what happens towards the end of that argument?
If they feel like they're like not getting through, or like
good. So if you're
like
not getting through,
desperate.
Okay, good. So you get desperate, and what happens when you get desperate in an argument? You get frustrated, everything sort of begins to dissolve, and everything, any principles that you might have held true to yourself that you think there were lines that you never might have crossed before this point, now in the third round, now when it's coming towards the end. Sorry?
Gloves are off.
Right, the gloves are really momish off, and they're really going to start going at him. You'll notice, though, that we spoke about this, I think, a little bit last time, but that so far does not seem to come around at all in this third round. And why would you think that Sofar does not speak anymore? So he's done. That's the third friend. He never seemed to have that much to say. But any time he spoke, Eov seemed to like totally like gloss over him as if his points were not really ever so meaningful. But why would Sofar not be in this round? So we're only going to hear from Eliphaz and Bildad. So where did Sofar go?
He probably said nothing else to say.
Okay, good. So there are a few perspectives. One is that he had nothing else to say. What else might you add? Why would he not speak?
Maybe he left. He gave up.
Okay, good. So one is that he had nothing left to say. Like, he sort of felt like he said his point. The other is that
maybe
he just like totally gave up.
And just sided with him.
Okay, good. So I would take out that first part. I don't know if I wouldn't say he felt bad. I would just say, yeah, maybe Eov made a great point. After the end of the second round, Eov made all of his points, and so far he's like, you know what, that's actually a really good point. You're making a great point, and he, I guess, was the only intellectually honest person at this point, and he's able to say, Eov, you're right, I agree with you, and no longer am I going to argue with you, no longer will I side with the other two, I'm now on your side. I think Rav Schwab actually makes that point explicitly to say that so far is now on Eov's side, so it's really only Eliphaz and Bildad. So, okay, like we said, Eliphaz is going to come now in Perek 22. Perek Chafiz, just really annoyed at Eov. He is just done with him. How did we leave off last time? Does anyone remember the end of Perek Chaf Aleph? What was Eov's like, main plea, or what was his state at that point?
Just like, you're my friend, is that it?
Good. He was just like, guys, like, come on, like, you're being so mean. I'm not this bad guy. You know me. Please be my friend. And this sort of desperation of him saying, I'm not this bad guy that you've seemingly been framing me as, and I really have no idea why God did this. Please be my friend. You are the ones I need right now. You are my friends, and I really need you. Okay. With that, so we begin Perek Chaf Beis. So take a look at Pasuk 2. So Eliphaz jumps right in and he says, does man benefit God when he learns wisdom from people? Does the Almighty care if you are right, or does he gain if you perfect your ways? Would fear of you make him contend with you or enter into judgment with you? So what is he trying to say over here? So it sounds like what he's saying is that Eov, no matter what, even if you are the most righteous guy in the world, which obviously you are not, but even if you are the most righteous guy in the world, you're not going to teach God any new things. God knows everything. And even if you want to impress God with your righteousness, you're not more righteous than him for sure. And stop trying to be so amazing and perfect and stop trying to say that you are this great guy, because you're just not. And even if you were as amazing as you say you are, you're still not going to be that impressive. So stop trying to present yourself as this amazing guy. Pasuk 5. Now he is really the gloves come off. He says, "Is your evil not great? And is there no end to your sins? For you exacted collateral from your brethren without due cause and stripped off the garments of the ill-clad. You did not give drinking water to the exhausted, and you withheld bread from the hungry. Should the land belong to a strong-armed man, or should prestigious people settle in it? You drove away widows empty-handed and crushed the arms of orphans. Therefore, you are surrounded by snares, and sudden fear confounds you." What is he saying over here?
You're bad.
He's saying you're really bad. How is this different than what he did in the first two rounds?
He's like getting specific examples.
Okay, good. The first two rounds, it was all very theoretical, right? So Eliphaz, all the friends.
It's still theoretical. To me, this is still theoretical. When did he ever any of these
things? Okay, good. We'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get there.
It's like the Democrats and Republicans.
Okay. Okay, good. No politics. We were saying all politicians are ridiculous because they're all just getting mad at each other and just saying stupid things. Okay, that's a fair point. In the first two rounds, everything is very, very theoretical, right? Bad things happen to bad people. Good things happen to good people. That's the black and white world that we live in. That seems to be how many people say that seems to be how the friends present themselves. In this final round, Eliphaz is no longer talking in theory. He's saying, "You want to know what, Eov? Bad things happen to bad people, and you are a bad guy. You didn't give water to people who needed it. You didn't give food to people who needed it. You had all these opportunities to be a good man, a good person in life, and you decided not to be that good person."
Is that like a reference to, which is interesting, from the parsha that we're reading around this time, like the Jews were going to go into the land and, you know, various nations didn't let them in, like didn't offer them food or water, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't know if he's like implying like you were bad to the Jews, and we know Eov was already involved from Mitzrayim and didn't speak up, and was already part of, maybe that's what he's kind of hinting at.
Okay, it could be. Could be. Maybe a stretch a little bit. Maybe if I would have said it first, I wouldn't think it was a stretch. But now that I'm hearing it, I could objectively say that it is more of a stretch. it's an interesting point, but I could also just tell you that might just be the way that things used to be spoken about back then. So in other words, someone who was a bad person is someone who would not give someone food. So those nations, the Jewish people wanted to show that they were bad. So in the Torah, they say they won't feed people. So to hear, in those times, you want to say that Eov was a bad guy, so say that he doesn't feed people, and that would be the example. Take a look at Pasuk 11. "Perhaps you cannot see in darkness, or a torrent of water covers you, that you say, 'Is not God in the heights of the heavens?' You look to the tops of the stars, which are lofty, and you say, 'What does God know? Can he judge through thick cloud? The clouds block him, so he cannot see. He walks about in a heavenly orbit.'" What is he saying over here?
God doesn't really know.
Is that what he's saying? He says, "And you say, 'What does God know?'" Right? So all of a sudden, again, Eliphaz is throwing these crazy ideas out here. Not only are you a sinner, but you also think that God is this clueless being who doesn't know anything. What do we think now about what Eliphaz is saying? Is this starting to sound a little bit less true, more true?
I feel like he's trying to, for the examples he gave before, he's trying to say here, like, you did all those bad things just because you thought God couldn't see you.
Okay, good. Why is that so ridiculous for him to make such an accusation that Eov does not think that God is all-knowing and that Eov does not think that God is all-powerful? Eov has said explicitly before him. He's been making a few points. One is that he is innocent. Two is that God is this mighty being. Three is that please be my friends. Right? But number two has been the entire time, God is this amazing mighty being. I can't really understand why he did this, but God is amazing. He's all-knowing. He's almighty. So the fact that Eliphaz is saying this clearly begins to at least turn us in the direction of saying that Eliphaz is just making things up and he has no idea what he's talking about. He's just trying to throw main things and accusations against Eov.
I think it's also just like, if this is really what you thought, then like, why wouldn't this be your first argument? If you really thought this was why this was happening,
we're saying all these things.
Yeah, I just feel like it's very clearly like not.
It's all very clearly a sign of desperation of just saying, you know what, I'm just going to tell you like it is. It must be that you're a bad guy. Why is he so convinced? Try to put yourself in Eliphaz's mind for a second. Why is he so convinced that Eov did these bad things? Meaning, even if these aren't necessarily the exact things that Eov did, why is he so convinced that it must be that Eov had to have done something at least this bad, is what he's saying?
It seems like he has a faulty reasoning for it, which is you got punished really badly, so it must fit the crime.
Good. Eliphaz and all the friends have had a very black and white way of looking at the world. They say that if you are getting punished, then it must mean that you really deserve it. Eo's point has been no, there's gray areas in the world, and good things happen to bad people, bad things happen to good people, and vice versa. So Eliphaz needs this to be true. So I wouldn't even say that Eliphaz is lying as much as he is so sure of himself that this is how the world works, that it must be that Eliphaz that Eo had to be a sinner. Take a look at Pasuk 15. Will you keep the traditional path where walked men of falsehood who were cut down before their time, whose foundation was swept away by a river, who said to God, go away from us, and what can God do to them? Right? He's saying, you're this wicked man, you. That's what you are. I need you to sort of basically just admit that you are this bad guy or this wicked man. And if you could accept that you're this wicked guy, then maybe we'll start talking about Shuvah or whatever. But at this point, Eliphaz is sort of given up on mentioning Shuvah at all, or he's just sort of throwing these accusations out there and saying all these really horrible things. It would seem that if Eliphaz still does have a, at least from his perspective, a good bone in his body, you would hope that he's going to do Shuvah, and he's hoping that through this harsher tone that Shuvah is going to come. Take a look at Pasuk 21. Learn now to go with him, and you will stay whole. Through these words, goodness will come to you. Accept guidance, if you will, from his mouth and place his utterances in your heart. Right? Eliphaz is saying, you are getting this advice from God. You're getting this guidance from God because he's punishing you, and that must mean that you did something bad. So go in his direction.
Yeah, it's just crazily ironic how he's saying all this and how bad he was and the way... He could have just taken his example of how he's behaving right now to this, mourning, terribly depressed man and how he's treating him, and just added that to the list. It's like so ironic.
Good. So we'll note that when Eo speaks, he really lays into his friends, and he really just says how they're just these terrible, horrible, wicked people. And seemingly also, we'll see next time how God also was not happy with how the friends acted. But yeah, he really could just, he's not such a great guy. And the fact that he's saying all these things about Eo just adds fuel to the fire of how not great of a guy he is. Pasuk 23, if you would return to the Almighty, you would be built up. If you would drive iniquity from your tent, then you would have a stronghold on the earth, and Ophir gold among the rocks of the brook. So your stronghold would be powerful, and you would have an abundance of money. So what is he saying over here? If you do good, if you repent, then what's going to happen?
Everything will get better.
You'll be successful again. Everything will be good in the world. Pasuk 28, you would utter a decree and it would be done, and light would shine upon your ways. If you are a good acting person, Eo, then you will be, you will receive all the good rewards that you seemingly were deserving of earlier in life, and that you will again, once again, be deserving of. Okay, that brings us to the end of Eliphaz. Eliphaz no longer speaks. This is the end of him speaking in this book, which again, it could be that maybe after what Eo has to say, maybe he comes around and he agrees with Eo, or it could be that he just totally gives up on him and he says that after this point, if he's not going to listen to me, then there's no point of ever actually contending with him once more. What do you think Eo's response is going to be? How do you think Eo feels? Eo just gave this like heart on the table, vulnerable plea, please be my friend again. Please realize that you're wrong and I'm right. How do you think Eo's going to respond right now?
He's going to be really upset and mad and angry.
Okay, so one perspective is that he's going to be really upset. Another perspective?
I would say he wouldn't even respond, because you should see at this point that you're not going to get anywhere with him.
Okay. Let's see what he has to say. It's an interesting point you bring up, Menachem, and maybe you can say that some of what he's saying is not actually directly to Eliphaz, and now it's a good point. Well, let's save it for a moment. Okay, so Perek 23, Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk 2. Still today my speech is bitter, my hand is worse than my sigh. If only I knew how to find him, I would approach his seat, I would set out my case before him, I would fill my mouth with arguments, I would know what words he would answer me, and I would understand what he would say to me. So let's break up what he said into two categories now. So in Pasuk 2, what is he saying? Still today my speech is bitter. Meaning what?
I'm still upset.
Everything's terrible. Nothing has changed. It's almost as if he's essentially saying to Eliphaz, you guys have been here for however long. It's not exactly clear how long this whole period does last for, but you've been here for however long, just being horrible to me. This all started with me really suffering, and you guys just made it worse. My hand is still bitter. Everything is horrible. Then what does he shift into between Sukkim, Gimel, and Hay, between 3 and 5? What is he saying over here?
Like, if I knew how...
I wish I could just, like, address God, basically.
Right, I'm tired of like all those like games, these back and forth theorizing. You think this is what God thinks. This is, I think this is what God thinks. I don't think that I'm guilty. You think that I'm guilty. I just wish I can get God in a room, shut the door, talk it out for a few hours. God could explain to me why he punished me. Everything would be good in the world. I don't need to have this anymore. I wish that's how life can be, and that's how it would be. But take a look at Pasuk 10. For he knows the way that is mine. He has scrutinized me, and I have emerged like gold. My feet have held fast in his footsteps. I have kept his way and have not strayed. I do not move away from the commandments of his lips. I have cherished the words of his mouth more than my sustenance. What is he saying?
Like he's followed Hashem. And...
yeah, I'm a good guy. And not only am I a good guy, but God knows that I'm a good guy. He uses the words, he's scrutinizing me, meaning he's really laid it into me. He's really punished me, and I'm not entirely sure why, maybe. But God realizes that I'm a good guy, and he's bringing these punishments for some other reason that I'm not clear of right now. Pasuk 14, for he will complete my just allotment, and with him are many such things. What does that mean? So if you're using the article, take a look at the footnote which quotes Rashi. So he will continue to chastise me until my full portion of punishment is complete. There have been many other such cases in the past. In other words, what he's saying over here is that God is punishing me. I don't know why, but I have to admit, God is punishing me. I don't know what it's for. There have been other cases like this of righteous people who have received terrible portions like this. And so it must be that's what it is. And so Eov is essentially saying at this point, I'm just going to accept it. God is doing this to me. At some point it will end, and then maybe it will all become clear to me. But for now, I'm just going to accept it. But again, he is reaffirming that he is not guilty. He's reaffirming that he did nothing wrong. And he's saying that God is punishing him like he does other righteous people for other unknown reasons. And he's accepting now and just saying that I'll ride it out.
Does the Satan come back into this at all? Because like it's kind of cool. Like at this point, you know, we know that the Satan was the one who orchestrated this entire thing. And it's just like, you know, that's why it happened.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know that. And I'm sure if he knew that, he wouldn't be too happy either. Probably much more upset than he is appearing to be.
Okay,
so
hopefully we'll discuss that a little bit more next week. We'll see how we can view the first two prakim of the book in the context of everything that's happened so far, and particularly in the end of the book, once we see how God speaks, because God does speak for a few prakim towards the end, and we'll see how it all sort of fits together. So it's a good question. Okay, I want to read you something from Rav Schwab's writing over here, and he sort of synopsizes this point. He says, Eov accepts God's judgment and recognizes that by suffering, without any reason known to him, he is experiencing God in his unique oneness. Nevertheless, he is pleading for an understanding of the purpose of such suffering, because if he does understand God's reason, his love and fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be that much greater. So in other words, Eov is saying, I'm accepting you, God, I'm accepting this fate, because he understands that this is what happens to righteous people, and this essentially catapults him to an even higher level. Now, I want to read you this amazing medrash that from the Yalkut Shimoni that Rav Schwab quotes over here. I'll read you the English translation that he has. It says, had Eov not complained when he was beset with suffering, he would have been so great that just as we now say in our tefillos, the God of Abraham, the God of Yitzchak, and the God of Yaakov, we would have added the God of Eov. That's kind of crazy. So instead of every single Shimon Esri, we mentioned all three of them, we would throw in a fourth one. We would say Eov also. Had Eov accepted his suffering without questions, God would somehow have placed him historically in a way that he would have become one of the Abus of the Jewish nation. He would have then been ranked among the world's greatest people, on a par with Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, great enough for us to have invoked his Zuchus and our daily tefillos together with the Abus. So what does that tell you, both for good and for bad? What does that tell you?
That like he might not be so great if this is the way he was handling like what he
okay
given.
One perspective is to say that he's not so great. What's the other perspective?
That he's so great that he got such a big punishment.
Okay, getting there.
And then had he done a little better, he would have been considered like one of the other.
Right. I don't think any of us can say for a second that if we were just a little bit better, then we'd be sort of on the same plane as Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. As much as he is not right, historically, it never ended up playing out like this, that Eov was one of the Avos. Nonetheless, he was close to being one of the Avos. The Medrash is explaining that he could have been there. He was like five steps away. He made a mistake, so God said, you can't be in this high ranking of people. But nonetheless, you are pretty amazing. So we'll get back to this as well again as we discuss next week the end of the book and we sort of wrap it up. But what our ultimate perspective on Eov is seemingly that he is this amazingly righteous guy. He made one mistake, and that maybe he complained a little too much. And again, we'll speak about that a little bit more. But to understand Eov is this amazingly righteous guy, and these other friends have the chutzpah to say how terrible the guy he is. And you can imagine how Eov is feeling, and just totally given up on them at the very least, that he is no longer can contend with them because he is this amazing guy, and he just is being punished, and he's trying to figure it out why, and they have just been terrible to him. Okay, good. Okay, let's go to Perek 24, Perek Chof Dalet. He begins the Perek. Why could not time spans have been hidden from the Almighty, and why do those who know Him not comprehend His days? It's a little bit of a complicated pasuk, but what is he saying over here?
Why did God make it so that we can't understand Him?
Okay, good. What's another perspective that you might have on that? He's saying that, why can't the timeline be hidden from God? Why would you want the timeline, why would you want how many years a guy is supposed to live for to be hidden from God?
To be hidden from God?
Yeah.
I just read Rashi.
Okay, good. What does he say?
So he's saying that if God didn't know when someone would die, then maybe he would have punished them until they were already dead.
Okay, good. So someone, you want to flesh that out, or someone else want to flesh that out, what that actually means? It's a little bit of it's very confusing.
Is it saying, is it asking, if Hashem doesn't know how your timeline, that's what it's saying?
Yeah. So my understanding of this, and it seems like what he's saying over here, is that wouldn't it be amazing if God thought I was going to be God thought that this person was going to live until 120, and really he only lives till 65, and so God's going to say I'm going to wait until this guy is 90 to punish him, and then it's going to turn out that the guy's going to die earlier, so he never will get the punishment, right? So it's a little bit convoluted, but essentially what he's saying is I wish God didn't know how long a person was supposed to live, because then God would try to punish that person later on in his life, and then he'd end up living without punishment.
He's assuming that because God knows how long you're going to live, that's what the time is when he's going
to
punish you.
It's a very odd statement, but that seems to be what he's saying. Okay, and then what's the next part? And why do those who know him not comprehend his days? What is he hoping for or requesting over here? Wouldn't it be amazing if the righteous people in the world would be able to understand a little bit more, would be able to understand how some of these things work? Maybe how great would it be if I, as the righteous Eov, would be able to look into the upper world for a moment and just be able to understand exactly what's going on over here? This seems to be the recurring theme in understanding what Eov is trying to get to, and that he's trying to understand why this terrible thing has happened to him. And he's saying, wouldn't it be amazing if I could understand his days, if I could understand how God worked? That seems to be what he's saying. Take a look at Pasuk 2. People move boundary markers, they rob a flock and graze it for themselves. They carry off the donkey of orphans. They exact the ox of a widow as a collateral. They steer the needy off the road. Together the poor of the land go into hiding. Behold, like wild donkeys in the wilderness, they go out for their labor, searching for prey. The desert provides him food for his lads. What's he saying over here? And he continues saying like this until the end of Pasuk 12. But what is he getting at? Wicked people are horrible people. And
they still survive?
Yeah, it seems like they survive. It seems like they get away with it. And right. This is in direct contrast to what he just said before. I, as the righteous Eov, I wish I can see into the upper worlds, because you would think that as a righteous person, I would get that, because since the wicked people get so much in this world, they do horrible things and they still get allotted some good judgments and some good times in this world. So why don't I, as the righteous person, get to see even a little bit more, be on a higher plane than them? And Pasuk 12, from the city the populace groans and the souls of the slain cry out, but God does not lay guilt, right? They're so horrible. They kill people. They're doing these horrible things to people. But God seems to not punish them at all, and they go untarnished in their entire lives. And he continues for the next seven or eight psukim saying how the lives of wicked people are like, and how they seem to not be necessarily so bad. But then Pasuk 19, as drought and heat snatch melting snow, so the grave snatches sinners. Eventually, the wicked will receive some sort of punishment. So even though we can't see it, we know it's going to happen. Pasuk 23, God grants him security and he relies on it, but his eyes are fixed on their ways. So this is sort of like a restating of faith for Eop. He's saying, I really do trust that at the end of the day, God will punish these bad people. It may not be in this world. It may not be in a way that I understand, but I know that they are going to have something bad happen to them. God gives them this false sense of security. They feel like, oh, all is well in the world. The wicked people, they're enjoying all their money and all their belongings and their family, whatever it is, but they're really wicked. Don't worry, they'll get what's coming to them. Plus 24, they are exalted briefly and then they are gone. They feel good for a moment, but that's it. They are crushed like all who are swept away, and they are snapped off like the top of a stalk. If this is not so, then who can prove me false and make my words into nothing? So the commentators Okay, so what does he? How does he conclude his statement over here? What's his big manifesto at the end of this second paragraph of his speech?
This is what I think, and who's going to argue?
Right, the wicked people are going to get what's bad for them. I, Eov, hopefully will am not deserving of this, but I hopefully will eventually be cured of this punishment. It is interesting to think for a second, maybe he is trying to contrast the wicked people from himself, right? He's been trying to prove his innocence the entire time. So maybe what he's saying over here is that wicked people live such good lives, and eventually they'll get what's coming to them. So too, maybe Eov is saying, I, as a righteous person, have lived such a terrible life. Imagine what good is coming to me. So maybe he is, in some sense, trying to justify these terrible things that are happening to him, and hoping that there will be a good reward that comes out of this.
Is he actually speaking these things, or is this taking place in his head?
Seems like he's speaking.
It doesn't really sound like a response to what
right.
Eliphaz said at all.
Okay, good. So it's a very good point, and that is a lot of how Eov sounds throughout here and the rest of the segment that we'll talk about today. It seems like he spent a few moments addressing his friends. So if you look at the beginning of Parak 23 of Parak Chav Gimel, when he says that my speech is bitter and my hand is worse than my sigh, he's not even really responding. He's just basically saying that you're not helping me at all. He will continue later on. He'll start to discuss. And even over here, I think some of the commentators do say that when he's talking about these wicked people, who are the wicked people? You say?
His friends. Probably.
Good. Maybe it's his friends, right? You guys think you're on your high horse and you think you're so amazing. You'll see. You're going to face some terrible punishment at some point. You may not have it now, and I may look like the bad guy because I'm getting punished. I'm really the good guy. You guys are the bad guys, and you will soon face the wrath of God. Maybe not even in your lifetime, but you'll face the wrath of God at some point. Yeah? Good? Okay. Perek 25, Perek Chafhei, Bildad comes in to the scene over here, and what do you notice about the Perek before we begin?
It's really short.
It's really short. What does that mean for you?
He has not
watched that. He definitely doesn't have much to say. And let's read the entire parak, because again, it's not that many psukim. And you'll let me know what he's trying, whose side he's on over here. He says, Pasuk 2, dominion and dread are with him. He makes peace in his heights. Is there a number for his legions? Upon whom does his light not shine? How can man be considered righteous before God? How can one born of woman be considered pure? Behold, the moon passed by and cast no light, and the stars are not pure in his eyes. How much more so man, who is like a maggot and a mortal, who is like a worm? What is he saying over here? Okay, let's get the obvious out of the way.
It sounds like he's calling into question what you have just said, considering himself righteous, meaning how can you... You can't even begin to understand what it means to be righteous or not as a human being.
Okay, good. So one perspective might be, Eov, you are clearly a terrible guy. And how do I know you're a terrible guy? Because you're saying you're not so bad. You're saying you're righteous. You're saying whatever about yourself. But even the greatest man is like a maggot before God. So clearly, Eov, you're not such a great guy, because if you were so great, you'd understand that you really are nothing. Good, that's one perspective. So again, he's still trying to rebuke him. What would the other perspective be? How could you interpret his words in the exact opposite way?
Not bad either, because it's so insignificant.
Okay, good. Getting there. So Rosh Schwab, listen to what Rosh Schwab writes. It's really amazing. He says, however, Eov demonstrated to them, this is, Okay, good. Over here. Bildad is now making a great concession to Eov. All along, he and the other friends had held a worldview in which there was an orderly pattern. Good is rewarded and bad is punished. However, Eov demonstrated to them that this is evidently not so. He showed that the world was often dominated by cruel brutes and criminals who nevertheless were intelligent and succeeded in building up civilization, and on the other hand, good people suffered and were exploited throughout the centuries of human history. So Eov proved to the friends that their worldview simply is not supported by the facts of world history. Based on these arguments, Bildad is now concedes that one's fate is no proof of his guilt or innocence, and that there is indeed evidently a contradiction in God's management of world affairs. Essentially, what if you take that and look at back at Bildad's words, he's saying God is almighty, God is amazing, man is nothing, and you can never understand how the two interact with one another. You can never understand why it would be that God would treat man nicely or poorly, because at the end of the day, all man is like dust of the earth, and so we cannot understand God's ways. And if you take that, it's a really powerful parak, because it seems like Bildad is the only one to actually say the words that I concede to you, Eov. Even so far, who again, so far doesn't show up again. The third friend, seemingly he never verbalizes and to say that I concede with you, Eov. But Bildad is the only one to say I concede and I agree with you. You're right, Eov. You're making a good point.
If you look at the argument that just exists between Eliphaz and Eov, so it kind of looks like he's coming in between and like pushing them both back and saying you're both wrong. That sort of kind of
Okay. Could be. It's a really good point. Okay, so you'll note that we said already that so far does not come back. The next 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, the next six prakim are all Eov speaking. Eov is a man that seems to have a lot to say, and so we'll try to break this down as best as we could. So if you look at the first parak, parak 26 over here, parak Chafbab, let's take a look at what he has to say. Parak, pasuk Bez, pasuk 2. How have you helped the one who has no strength? How have you saved the arm that has no power? What have you advised the one who has no wisdom, yet you have dispensed counsel so liberally? To whom have you told new words whose breath has gone out from you? Will the dead spirits who are underneath the water be stirred, or those who dwell there? What is he saying over here? You guys have added nothing to this conversation. This has been the biggest waste of time in my life. We've been speaking for like 20 parakim. I don't know what it's been so far. And you guys have literally added nothing to my life. Like, I've had enough of this. And you'll note over here that this seems to be the real main way that Eov ever really responds to his friends ever again. You'll see in the rest of this parakim and the rest of the parakim, Eov seems to not directly contend with them anymore. He may make some snarky comments about how bad things happen to wicked people, seemingly implying that they are the wicked friends that will get punished, but he does not seem to really directly be speaking to them anymore. You'll notice that the rest of this parak really speaks about how amazing and how mighty God is. Take a look at Pasuk 14, the end of this parak. Behold, these are but the tip of his ways, right? After saying all these amazing things, this is just the tip of the iceberg. What is the least we can understand about him? Who can fathom the thunder of his mighty deeds? God is this amazing, almighty being. We cannot understand anything about him. You guys are idiots. I'm righteous. I don't know why God has done this to me, but it's all okay, because God is this amazing, mighty being. Parak 27, he says, let's take a look what he says. As God lives, I swear that he has removed justice from me, and the Almighty has embittered my soul, but as long as my soul is within me, and the Spirit of God is in my nostrils, my lips shall not speak iniquity, and my tongue shall not utter deceit. Far be it from me, until I perish, to say, you are right. I will not renounce my claim of innocence from myself. I have held fast to my righteousness, and I will not release it. My heart has never embarrassed me. Okay, so what is he saying over here? I'm innocent. This is maybe one of the most explicit times where Eov says it. I'm totally innocent. I did nothing wrong. Pasuk 7, now this is clearly referring to his friends. May my enemy be treated like the wicked, and those who rise up against me like the iniquitous. For what is the hypocrite's hope? Though he gains a profit, for surely God will cast away his soul. Will God heed his cry when misfortune befalls him? Can he delight in the Almighty, calling on God at all times? You guys, you are the most disgusting, wicked people I've ever encountered in my life. I am innocent. You are at fault. I am being punished. I don't know why, but for sure God will really get you at some point in life. You really, guys, are just such horrible and terrible people. The rest of the parak is just basically Eov saying what sort of what will happen to the wicked in life and how they will eventually perish from this world. That's the end of Parak 27. And now let's do Parak 28 very quick. Yeah.
Why does he, like, just need to talk so much about how, like, the wicked will get what they deserve. Like, what does that have to do with anything? I could get, like, in terms of, like, him, but, like, to just talk about it so endlessly is, like, it's like, extra.
Okay, so I'll take away part of your question, but I'll re-ask the first part. Why does Eve talk so much in general? Right? He's, as much as other people are talking, he's talking at least double the amount of every single person. He's why is he talking?
Acting as a teacher towards his friends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go on. What do you mean by that?
Like, I feel like he's taking it as an opportunity to be like, you're so quick to judge, but like, look at yourself. You really should, like, better yourself as a person.
So why does he talk so much, though? Can't he just say that in that much, in the same amount of time that they said it?
He's trying to work through it himself.
Okay, good. Like, one is that it shows
his friends aren't helping him.
Good. One, it shows that he's really working on this himself. He's, you could see it, like, the gears turning as he's speaking. What else? Eve doesn't have his act together. He's just like a frantic mess over here. Again, remember that first image we have of Eve after he loses everything? He's sitting in the ground in the ashes. He's like frantic. He's speaking. He's just talking. He's just emoting. And when you emote and you're not coming at this with any real structure, as amazing as it is, right? You think of what he says. If we do explain what he says as this regurgitation of words and just like spitting out words because he's in so much pain, it's amazing to think of how structured it is. But I don't think he was trying to be so structured about it. I think he was just responding and speaking out of pain. And when you speak out of pain, you just speak, and there's no end to it. There's no real a set time to it.
I just don't really understand how they were friends before.
It doesn't sound like they were friends.
It's a little unclear.
Keep calling them friends, but it sounds like they came to like.
Well, that's what the text calls them, right? They're the friends. His friends come to the. They originally came because they were, for lack of a better term, they were going to pay a shiva call almost, right? They were going to comfort him. And so that's why they were there in the first place. Yeah, they don't seem like such good friends, but.
When people say pretty stupid stuff at shiva calls. Right?
Even the best of friends say stupid things.
But also, in the tough times when you see the true, you know, person, whoever that is, as a friend or not.
Yeah, well, you really be there for me in my toughest of times. And I guess, they weren't his true friends, but it seems like they all got along at some point. Again, it's hard to also realize this, but when you take yourself out of the book and you don't think about what's actually being said over here, the Gemara says that they were all prophets, right? So that means they all did have to be great in some way, shape, or form. They were all, as the Gra we noted and others seem to believe, they were all part of Abraham's line, and they all had great blood in them. So it seems like they were good people, and maybe they went off the derech at some point, and they didn't they just messed up at some point. Eov also seems like he might have messed up a little bit at some point. Maybe this whole event was his big mistake. But at the end of the day, if we take away the bad of what gets done and said in this book, they seem to have been pretty good people all in all. So it is important to keep that in the context as well. But yeah, how were they really friends before? It's not definitely not clear in the text. Okay, Perek 28. The first 11 psukim over here are very kind of like cryptic. So let's take a look at the first two psukim. For there is a source for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the soil and copper is smelted from stone. He sets a limit to the darkness and he investigates the end of everything, the source of gloom and the shadow of death. A river bursts forth from its normal flow to where it is unknown to a human to human feet. It rises and surges over people. There is land where food once grew, but its place was transformed, resembling fire. Skip ahead. He continues saying things that, again, seem a little bit unclear what he's talking about until he gets to Pasuk 12. But as for wisdom, where can it be found? Which is the place of understanding? We'll stop right there. What is he trying to say over here?
I read this part.
Okay.
He's basically saying, like, you, like, Hashem, like, revealed so much. Like, you know a lot about a lot of things, but he's never revealed, like, his wisdom. Like, how he knows so many things.
Okay, good. There are so many things in this world that do make sense to us, right? Man can figure out a lot of things. We can understand a lot of the intricacies of this world. The one thing we don't understand is wisdom. Now, why is it so interesting that Eov is talking about wisdom over here and saying how wisdom is totally incomprehensible? To think back to some of the earlier Prakim and some of the arguments with some of the friends.
We used to call each other wise ones.
Yeah, it all started with, I can't remember who started first, but all I remember is that Eov made fun of so far for saying that he was so wise. Like, oh, this is the wisest guy that I got, right? So back and forth, they were sarcastically calling one another wise. They were joking and saying, Eeyub, you're clearly not wise. Eeyub was saying, you guys are clearly not wise. And they were throwing out that word just loosely a lot. And over here, Eeyub makes the point of saying that no one understands wisdom in this world. Wisdom is God's thing. That's something that he could only comprehend. Other things we can comprehend in this world, but wisdom is not one of those things. But as for wisdom, Pasuk 12, where can it be found? Which is the place of understanding? 13, mankind does not know its worth. It cannot be found in the land of the living. The depth says, it is not in me. And the sea says, it's not within me. Or if you look throughout the entire world, even though if you excavate in a cave, you'll find some treasures down there. You know what you won't find? You won't find wisdom. 15, precious gold cannot be exchanged for it, and its price cannot be weighed in silver. It cannot be compared to Ophir gold or to precious Shoham or sapphire. Gold and glass cannot approximate it, nor can its exchange be in golden articles. He goes on saying how priceless wisdom is and how it's not like anything else. Pasuk 21, it is hidden from the eyes of all living things and is concealed from the bird of the heavens. Doom and death say, with our ears we have heard of its reputation. Only God understands its way, and he knows its place, for he peers to the ends of the world. He sees what is under the entire heavens, making a prescribed weight for the wind, apportioning water with a measure, when he makes a set allotment for the rain and a path for clouds of thunder.
It sounds like at the end of all this discussion that he's like, you know what, you guys can answer it, so I'm just going to try to answer myself.
Okay, and what is he saying over here?
Well, he's basically saying, you know, what he knew all along, which is that we're never going to know. It's all...
Okay, why won't we know? What is he saying over here that shows that we will never know?
I got it, like, wisdom isn't a tangible thing. Like, gold and silver are all tangible things, but
okay.
Wisdom is something that just...
supersedes
and
just bigger than
anything.
Yeah.
So
okay. And therefore what?
Only God can.
Yeah. Like, you'll never have a concrete hold on it, therefore God's the only one that can actually fully.
Okay, and therefore what? If we can never fully comprehend wisdom in this world, then what does that mean?
We can't question God's actions.
Good, keep going.
Therefore everything happens for a reason.
But
we don't understand it.
We'll never understand suffering in this world. God is amazing. God is way, it's ridiculous to say it in a sentence, but he's obviously smarter than all of us. He is the true beholder of all wisdom. As much as we try to understand in the world, we cannot understand everything. Even my suffering, says Eeyub, has a purpose and understanding and a reason, but I cannot fathom it. Only God can fathom it. Pasuk 27. Then he looked and recorded it. He prepared it and perfected it. Wisdom is amazing. It's absolutely perfect. And he said to man, behold, the fear of the Lord is wisdom, and refraining from evil is understanding. What is he saying over here?
You're a smart person, then you'll just hear God.
Okay, let's take a look at the Hebrew of the pasuk, just to help us recontextualize where we're at. So pasuk chavchet vayomer laadam hin yiras Adonai hi chachma, right? Fearing God, that's wisdom. Besor meira bina, and turning away from bad, that's what we call bina. That's what we call understanding. What is he saying over here? Someone read between the lines for me.
The only hint God gave us was do what's good and don't do what's bad. That's the only insight we have to this puzzle. So
I want you to think back. Where else did we have Sor Meira in this book?
That's how he was described.
Eeyub was someone who was Sor Meira. So what is he saying over here? I, Eeyub, am Sor Meira, and therefore I am. I have.
Wisdom.
Not wisdom. I have bina. I have understanding. I certainly, I'm pretty close to it, right? I'm almost there. I almost have wisdom, but I don't have wisdom just quite there. I have bina. I have understanding. The only wisdom that you can have on any level in this world is fearing God. I also fear God, says Eeyub. So I am someone who fears God, and therefore I do have some level of chachma. I do have some level of wisdom. I turn away from the bad in the world, so therefore I have bina. I have understanding. No one, including myself, has a full understanding of the wisdom of God, full understanding of chachma. Only God can really reach that level. I and all mankind could come close to being wise if we follow in God's ways, because he's the only one that does understand wisdom. So that's how he comes to the end of Perek Chavchet. So just to sort of summarize what he did in these last three prakim, Perek Chavav, the 26th Perek, he says basically to the friends, you wasted my time, and then he goes on to say that God is the strong, almighty being. Perek 27, Chavzayin, he reclaims his innocence, and he basically says that God will punish the wicked, seemingly talking about his friends. In this Perek, he talks about how amazing wisdom is, how precious wisdom is, only God really understands wisdom, and that Eov is obviously not God and doesn't have wisdom, but still he has Bina, he has understanding, because he has decided not to do bad, and seemingly he follows in God's ways. That's where we're up to at this point. So we're up to Perek 29. So now, Perek Chavtet and Perek Lamed, they're mirror images of each other. In Perek Chavtet, Eov tells us what his life used to be like, how amazing he used to be. And Perek Lamed, in the 30th chapter, Eov says how terrible his life is now. So let's take a look at some of the things he has to say. So again, 29:2. If only I could be as in the earlier months, as in the day when God would watch over me. By the way, this gives us a little bit of a sense of how long this has been going on for. So he says in the earlier months. So it seems like this could be this entire book has been taking place over the course of months, right? So again, we don't know the exact amount of time, but it's not a 2 or 3 days. It's not a 2 or 3 weeks. It's a few months. So if only I could be as in the earlier months, as in the days when God would watch over me, when his lamp would shine over my head and I would walk in darkness by his light, when I was in the days of my prime, when God's mystery was above my tent, when the Almighty was still with me, with my attendants all around me, when my steps were bathed in cream and the rocks would pour out pools of oil for me, when I would go out to the city gate atop a platform and set my seat in the town square, youths would see me and conceal themselves, the aged would rise and stand. What sort of picture is he painting over here?
He's a great, honorable...
Yeah, life was good, man. He was here. I think it was really good for himself. Pasuk 12, for I would rescue a pauper from his wailing and an orphan who had no one to help him. The blessings of the forlorn would be upon me, and I would bring joyous song to a widow's heart. I donned righteousness, and it suited me. My justice was like a cloak and a headdress. What's so interesting about what he's saying over here?
This is the exact...
opposite.
Like examples. Yeah, it's opposite.
Oh, good. He's seemingly directly confronting what Eliphaz said. You jerk, Eliphaz. You're saying all these horrible things about me. You were saying the exact opposite of how I used to act. I used to support the widows. I used to support the orphans. I used to do everything good for them. Okay, good. Fantastic. Okay, Pasuk 18. I said to myself, I will expire with my nest intact. I will live as long as the phoenix. My roots will be open to water and dew will always dwell in my branches. My honor will always renew itself and my bow will refresh itself in my hand. What is he saying over here? He was always very confident in himself that he would continue on like this, that life would always be good for him. It could be that this is almost unintentionally, it's him revealing maybe a negative quality of his, and that is he always just thought that things would be good in his life. He always just sort of took that for granted, but we know that we can't take that for granted, that God is almighty and God can change things in a second if he wants to. Again, we don't always understand why, but he does that. So maybe even himself is pointing out the flaw of an earlier flaw of his, that he always used to believe that things would always be good for him. In particular, the words I find most powerful is that he says, I will expire with my nest intact, meaning what?
He thought he was going to die with, like, everything still being there.
And not just his money, but what?
His children.
Children. He thought his whole family would still live on, and they would live, you know, far beyond him. That's what he thought, but he obviously was wrong about that. Now, Pasuk 30, as we said, is all the bad things, and how terrible he is right now. Pasuk 1, but now they scoff at me, people younger in age than I, whose fathers I rejected from serving with my sheepdogs, right? People who were so lowly, who you might, God forbid, call like a loser or something. There were such lowly people in this world who I wouldn't even look at, but now their children look at me as like this loser. Pasuk 9, but now I have become their refrain. I have become a byword for them. They have despised me, distanced themselves from me, and have not withheld spittle from my face. God has loosened my bowstring and afflicted me, that they have thrown off their harness from my presence. People just look at him and think he's like this big joke in the world. Pasuk 16, so now my soul pours itself out upon me, my days of affliction seize me. By night my bones are pecked from upon me, and my sinews have no rest. What is he saying over here? Earlier in this parak, no one respects me. People look at me as like nothing, and I'm in this unbearable pain. It's horrible. Look at the Pasuk 19. It has taught me to sit in clay. I am likened to dust and ashes. I'm literally nothing. I'm literally afar. I'm literally dust of the earth. Pasuk 20. I cry out to you, but you do not answer me. When I stop, you scrutinize me. Everything is just terrible. I try to reach out to God, but it seems like he's not really there listening to me. And then probably the strongest words are at the end of Pasuk 21. You turn to be cruel to me with the might of your hand. You despise me. Eov says, now it's clear to me that you hate me. Again, if you take what he's saying now in the context of what he just said a few parakim ago, do you think he means what he's saying? Why do you think he's saying that God despises him? Didn't he just say a little while ago that God is almighty and I don't understand what he's saying, what he does, but he does, all of his ways are wisdom. How do you put this in context of that?
He seems to be wavering back and forth, meaning the mind can't comprehend what he said earlier.
Good.
He understands it, but at the same time, he's still limited to the perspective of a human being.
Good, right? He believes in everything he said, but again, that emotional state of, I don't get it. I know I just said God's amazing, but like, he has to despise me. Why would he treat me like this? It's that inner tension, emotional tension that people do face. Even if they see God's greatness, they still face this tension. Pasuk 23, for I knew that you would bring me to death, to the destination of all life. What's he saying over here? He's saying, I knew that I would die eventually. I get that that's how life works. But it seems like he's saying that I never really knew that this would be my destination, that my destiny would be to have such terrible pain and suffering. And then finally, he finished up the parak. I had hoped for goodness, but evil came. I had looked forward to light, but darkness came. My innards boiled and did not cease. Days of oppression came toward me. I go about darkened, though not from the sun. I rise up in public and scream. I become a brother to jackals, a friend to owls. My skin has become blackened upon me, and my bones have dried out from heat. My harp has tuned for mourning, my flute to the sound of weepers. What is he saying?
He's like so lowly.
He's done. What'd you say, Toby?
His life sucks.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, it's just, this is it. This is like Toby. You know, even if I was destined for this is just like, it's gone to no end. I am just utter pain, and just, it's really just horrible.
He really is just like going back and forth, because like, Prague ago, he said, like, I have accepted what Hashem has, like, what God has done onto me, and now he's just like, my life sucks.
Yeah. Yeah?
It's like, poor guy.
Okay. Good. Perek 31, Perek Lamed Aleph, the final long speech that Eov gives of this entire book. He speaks once more after this, but really not that much. So this is really the last speech. He uses it to say how awesome he really is. Let's see. Pasuk 1. I forged a covenant for my eyes, and I would not gaze at a maiden. Why then is this my portion from God above and the legacy of the Almighty from on high? Behold, calamity is for a perverse person, disaster for those who commit iniquity. Does he not see my ways and count all my footsteps, whether I went with falsehood or if my feet hurried to deceit? Let him weigh me in the scales of righteousness, then God would know of my integrity. God, I was like awesome. I literally did nothing wrong ever, and I'm just the most amazing guy. And what he does over here, he begins this pattern, which it's more noticeable in the Hebrew than in the English. But essentially, he gives like a what if, or like a if I would have done this, I would understand why you're punishing me, or something like that. But really, I never did this, and I'm so amazing. So let's take a look. Pasuk 7.
Maybe he's just like really. He sounds really haughty.
Okay, we'll get back to that in a second. Okay. Pasuk 7. If my steps ever veered from the proper way, or if my heart ever went after my eyes, or if anything ever clung to my hand, then may I sow and let another eat, and may my produce be uprooted. If my heart was ever seduced over a woman, or if I lay in wait at my neighbor's door, then may my wife grind for another man, and may strangers kneel over her, for that is licentiousness, that it is an iniquity for the judges to punish. For it is a fire that consumes unto doom, and it would uproot all my produce. If I really ever did anything wrong, then let me get punished for these things. But God, I didn't do anything wrong. Certainly didn't do any of the terrible things that I'm describing now.
But that's like really specific.
Okay, what are you trying to say?
Like, maybe, like, just because he never did anything doesn't mean he's never like thought of anything.
Okay, how might you respond to that, someone else?
I mean, that's not like a bad thing. Like, everyone thinks of, like, you know, like you're on a diet, you want to eat a cake, and like you don't, so that's great, you know?
Right.
Like, you're allowed to like think, like whatever. Right. I don't know. I feel like this was so specific.
Okay, so on the one hand, what Eo was clearly making very obvious is that he is saying on some level that I guess he did think of these things because he's voicing it. Now, if I would have ever done this, you know, that sounds a little too specific to be like something you never did. What I would argue and what I think he is trying to say is that even if I did think of doing it, maybe I did think of doing these things sometimes, still I never did it because, again, I am this righteous person. That seems to be what he's trying to get at. And he keeps going on this pattern until really the end of his parak, saying, if I ever would have done this, then he punished me. But really, he was trying to say how amazing and how great he really is.
It's like, there's certain things we're not supposed to, like, think about too deeply.
Yeah.
It just seems like he's forcing himself to go into that, you know, depth of thought that he probably shouldn't be. Like, it seems like he's heading towards insanity a little bit.
Yeah, it's
seriously,
bipolar.
It seems like he's starting to... And I mean, it's unfortunate. I mean, as you can see, where the grief comes in and
yeah.
everything, and that...
Yeah. At some point, you reach your limit, and he really...
That's right.
He lost his limit. He doesn't have
anything. Help it either. I mean, it kind of helped push him over, if anything.
Right. See, it's interesting also to know, just only you saying that made me think of it, if you do say that at the end of it all that his friend did come around to be on his side, then it seems like he probably would get some extra chizak from that, and he would not have gone off the deep end. It would seem that the fact that it seems like he really is going off the deep end over here, that that's an argument in the direction of saying that his friends really never did concede with him, and they just gave up on him. That's how you might look at it. This all ends, his speech ends at Pasuk 35. So he goes off into saying how amazing he is, how he never did any of these sins. And finally he says, Pasuk 35, who will grant that someone would hear me? My desire is for the Almighty to answer me. Let whoever contends with me write a book, please. Write a book, right? Realize, God, I need you to answer me. Please just hear my prayers. I would carry it on my shoulder, bind it as crowns upon myself. I would tell him the number of my steps. I would draw him close to me like a prince. If my land would shout out against me, or its furrows would weep in unison, if I have ever eaten its yield without payment or embittered the soul of its owner, then in place of wheat may thorns emerge, and in place of barley weeds. God, if I ever really did anything wrong, then punish me. But God, I did not do anything wrong. So please, hear my prayers. Please take away this pain and suffering from me. And then finally, this whole speech ends, and the parak ends. How? Tamud Divrei Iyov. Iyov's words have ended. He's done speaking. That brings us to the end of Iyov's main point. Pretty powerful and sort of a abrupt ending, right? You can see how it might be able to go on for a little bit longer. It wouldn't be so surprising if he went on for another 10 parakim and just spoke about some other things, but nonetheless, this is where Iyov stops. This is where his point ends. Please, God, answer me. I'm not a bad guy. I might have done some things bad in my life, but I'm not so terrible. Please, God, I don't know why I'm suffering. Please end my suffering. Please, just let me know that you're there for me. We'll stop right here. I'll just give you a quick teaser for next week. The next parak is probably the oddest one of the entire book, and that is because all of a sudden this new guy comes along. Anyone know his name? I'll give you a hint, it's written right there.
Elihu.
Ah, Elihu. So this guy Elihu comes out of nowhere, and it's a little bit odd because we've known the entire Sefer that Iyov has three friends. We're literally three quarters of the way done, and we know that he has three friends, and whatever, they were not nice, they were nice, whatever. Okay. All of a sudden, this fourth guy comes along. So we'll have to grapple with next week is who this fourth friend is. We'll note that he speaks for a long time. He also seems, again, Iyov does not speak back to anyone anymore. So Elihu speaks for a very long time.
He had no knowledge of the previous conversation.
It's unclear. We'll have to speak about that next week. After Elihu speaks, then God finally speaks. Someone knows what they're talking about. And then the book ends. For now, we'll stop right here. But can't wait for the last night's.